Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Aaron Newcomb joins me. We're going to be talking about vulnerabilities in containers that you can immediately test with Anchor. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Aaron Newcomb, episode 427, recorded March 28th, 2017, Anchor. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Cloudflare, the operating system for the edge of the internet. More than 6 million websites, apps, APIs, and software-as-a-service companies use Cloudflare's services to load fast, stay secure, and weather whatever the internet throws at them. For a free online chat session with a Cloudflare support engineer, visit cloudflare.com/twit. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, libre, open-source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at StoneAge.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, the little projects, projects you may be using every day and totally unaware of it and then get to see behind the scenes, projects you might want to download right after this show and start playing with or sign up for whatever services they have or whatever. And I need a different opening. I'll eventually create a different opening, but I kind of like that one so far. I've been using it for a while. Joining me today is my co-host, Aaron Newcomb. Aaron, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks. Whoa, look at my head. It's so big. Here, let me do this. Ooh.
Aaron,
yeah, that's a little better. All of a sudden, I saw myself in the return. It was like, oh, my. I know my head's big, but it's not that big. Come on.
Yeah. Well, that's part of it. Mine's, I think, slightly bigger, but just a tiny bit. I wouldn't actually argue that. So where are you speaking to us from today?
So I'm in the studio here at New Relic. They actually have a sound studio here. I've got drums, I've got keyboards, amps, all kinds of things if we wanted to just turn this into a music podcast. But Yeah, they actually have a nice studio here, so the sound is muted a little bit, and they have a Blue Yeti mic. So I know you're a big fan of those, so I was like, yeah, let's give it a try.
Well, I'm in the unsound studio. I'm in my bedroom in Beaverton, Oregon, here doing the show this week, using my wonderful little hotspot that I was talking about before the show with that really seems to be giving me a lot better bandwidth than the Wi-Fi locally would have given me. And so, but the show is not about us. The show is about our guests and what they bring to the picture. Today, we have, I think, a pretty important and fascinating subject. We have a couple guys coming in from Anchor. Anchor is, I've lost that in my list of things that I was going to record. Anyway, Anchor does, it's all about containers. It's all about containers. I mean, container. For like 6 months, all we had was container shows. This is most specifically about Docker, but maybe other container formats later. And if you want to, we had Docker on the show back in April of 2015, Floss Weekly 330. So if you want to pause this show for a moment and then go listen to that and then come back, that way I won't have to explain too much about what Docker does. Aaron, I may let you take a little bit of that. But one of the things is this. That Anchor seems to do is to do deep inspection into Docker images, because as you start loading layers and layers of Docker on top of Docker and top of Docker builds, one of the things that might happen is, of course, bugs are discovered and security vulnerabilities are discovered. And a recent study apparently looked at Docker Hub, which is sort of like the central location, similar to what NPM would be for Node.js, that sort of thing. And apparently 75% of the images on Docker Hub have a medium or high security vulnerability. And that's crazy, because if you're taking that and then building it into your deployment, your applications, you're essentially opening yourself up to security issues. And if you're not staying on top of it, I mean, every day there's a few new, they call them CVEs, sort of the standard security bulletins comes out every day. And so if you're not staying on top of that and you're deploying vulnerable software, then you're opening yourself up to a lot of dangerous stuff. Aaron, you want to fill in a little bit more here?
No, I think that's good. And the other thing, too, is that, you know, this is a technology that's being used more and more by developers instead of turning to things like VMs or running separate instances in the cloud. So an orchestration tool like this is really important. And I'm not sure, I mean, we'll have to ask our guests. I'm not sure what the whether this tool is solely orchestration, analytics, We do some of this as well at New Relic, so I'll try not to you know, get into the differences in I'm not going to mention my product today, but I do want to kind of figure out how the product could help people, not only from an orchestration standpoint, but also, you know, identify security vulnerabilities or do updates. You know, how difficult is that? We also talked, if people are going back and listening to the Docker one, they should also listen to the Kubernetes episode as well. I don't have that on hand. I don't know what number it is, but you know, just do a search for Kubernetes on the Twit page and see if you can find that, because they kind of bookend each other a little bit.
Cool. And we'll be bringing our two guests on in just a moment. We're going to be bringing on Dan Nurmi, who is the CTO and co-founder of Anchor, and also Tim Gerla, who is the VP of Community and Strategy at Anchor. And Dan Nurmi was actually formerly one of the founders of the Eucalyptus Project, which we also had on Floss Weekly about 3 or 4 years ago. That was sort of the run your own AWS equivalent cloud locally, or on your own hardware or on somebody else's hardware. Apparently Tim Gerla was also formerly of the Ansible project, which was about doing deployments in terms of similar to what we do with Salt and Puppet and things like that. So Ansible's yet another solution. And we had them on the show too back about 2 or 3 years ago. Well, I tell you, in 10 years, we've had almost, because they keep making new projects. Anchor's clearly a new project, so I'm glad people keep making new stuff. So otherwise, we start running out. Anything further, Aaron, before I bring them on?
No, let's do it.
Okay, well, right after this important message, though, because this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Cloudflare. Cloudflare is on a mission to help build a better internet. Cloudflare makes your site safer, faster, and more reliable, so you can stop worrying about slow loading page times, downtime, or getting hacked. Cloudflare is incredibly easy to use, and sign up takes less than 5 minutes. Cloudflare's global network of 100-plus data centers caches your content and moves it closer to visitors. They'll automatically enable all of the latest internet protocols like IPv6 and HTTPS rewrites that will keep you fast and secure. Your domain will automatically configure to utilize HTTP2, giving you an over 30% performance boost with no additional configurations. End-to-end, Cloudflare speeds up every request to your site with performant DNS, caching, content optimization, load balancing, and more. Cloudflare doesn't only provide distributed DOS protection. Their web application firewall is powered by a massive IP reputation that updates all users. Cloudflare's 24/7 security team is constantly watching for new zero-day vulnerabilities and deploying firewall rules to block exploit attempts. No matter what you choose for your cloud compute, AWS, Azure, Google Cloud, a combination of public or hybrid, Cloudflare works with all of them. Using Cloudflare gives your business the option to use more than one cloud provider, so you don't get locked into any of them. If you're hit with a DDoS attack, or if your site suddenly experiences a surge in legitimate traffic, you'll pay the same amount. Plans range from free, $20 a month, $200 a month, and custom plans for enterprise. No matter what plan type you sign up for with Cloudflare, you're joining a massive neighborhood watch for the edge of the internet. Cloudflare is offering Twit listeners a free online chat session with one of their top support engineers to answer any of your questions. Visit cloudflare.com/twit to sign up today. That's cloudflare.com/twit. And we thank Cloudflare for their support of Floss Weekly. And let's go ahead and bring on our guests. Dan, welcome to the show.
Hi there. Thank you so much for having us today.
Great. And where are you speaking to us from?
So we're in Santa Barbara, you know, a city just a little bit north of Los Angeles, and this is where Anchor is headquartered. We've got a nice little office right in downtown.
Cool. Well, I work a lot in Santa Monica, so I should come up and say hi to you at some point there. You're just up the street, sort of. Well, up
absolutely.
The long street. The long street. It's just, up the PCH, that's all that matters. That's the important part.
Indeed.
That's a beautiful drive. And let's also bring on Tim Gerla. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Hi, thanks for having me.
Great, and where are you speaking to us from?
I'm calling in from my home office in Chapel Hill, North Carolina.
Ah, 3 hours into the future. You can tell us what's going to happen. Awesome. Well, let's start with Dan. Dan, give us the 30,000-foot view. What is Anchor, and how do you pronounce it? I'm probably mispronouncing it. And what is it? What problem is it solving?
Absolutely. And no, I think you're pronouncing it just the way that we do. So Anchor is a company that we started. And as you already kind of mentioned, Our DNA is really about open source infrastructure software. We've got folks from Ansible, we've got folks from Eucalyptus, you know, some Hewlett Packard Enterprise people. And so we really are into the infrastructure space. And when we started Anchor, we looked around and there was absolutely no question that containers are one of the most interesting technologies that's come along in quite some time in this area. And it's really advancing the sort of cause of making sure that, you know, developers can make very, very rapid progress on bringing ideas to production and getting those ideas into a production setting and then coming back, iterating over them and continuing. And when we first looked at this technology, it's got a huge amount of promise and we have great respect for the momentum that we found. But we also looked around and thought there's going to be some barriers, right? There's some new things that containers bring to the table. And that's what we really focused on with Anchor and the Anchor technology. And so specifically, one of the biggest sort of challenges that we encountered right away was, well, now that developers can grab these amazing encapsulated containers that have a lot of power in them and use those to compose their own applications, share them easily between each other, and get them portably from their development environment all the way into production, there's been kind of a bit of an explosion in variance when it comes to the type of software and the number of software versions and what types of things are being put into containers. And immediately, that high variance kind of leads to a challenge where, before things run in production, we felt a lot of folks are going to be faced with an issue of what's really in these containers. You know, what kind of software are we putting into production, and how do we manage that variance? And so, fundamentally, that's what Anchor technology does. We take a container or a massive number of containers that are flowing from development through to production through some, usually an automated CI/CD kind of environment. And we do a deep inspection of exactly what's in those containers. And then we can then turn around and use that information to allow users, be they security, ops, or development teams, to specify certain policies that allow them to express a best practice or a security practice to make sure that before a container goes into production, we can apply policy and make sure that those things are conforming.
Well, thank you for your time, and well, it was a great show. nice long answer. I appreciate that. It really sets the context for what we're doing here. So one of the things, just so we can do a sort of a brief overview of Docker as we get into this show, one of the things that Docker does, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, I probably will be, is that it sets up layers. So in other words, I can install a fully operational MySQL instance, but MySQL still needs some features from Ubuntu below it. But that sort of locks in a particular version of Ubuntu that I am downloading with my MySQL instance, and then I may be doing some layering on top of that. One of the problems I see, and I think this is what Anchor is addressing, and you can tell me, is that I need to be able to watch the versions of Ubuntu that I put in my underlying layers so I don't have security vulnerabilities. Is that fair?
Absolutely. It's really interesting that, containers are such a, general format. A lot of times you'll see, like you mentioned, there's a MySQL container out there, but that is a piece of software, MySQL. But underneath that, there's a fully functioning operating system, usually, right? And oftentimes what you'll find is that could be a version of Debian, it could be Ubuntu, it could be CentOS, could be anything. And when folks are using it, they see MySQL, but as a matter of fact, there's all of the supporting infrastructure often that comes along with the container. And not only operating system, but there's also things on top of the operating system. So we're starting to see a lot more containers that have, say, node packages or Ruby gems or things that aren't installed as part of the underlying operating system. And those are all software artifacts that are in the container itself. And Anchor actually will go in and allow you to see exactly how a container is composed. These are the operating system packages. These are the node packages. These are the application specific packages. And these are files that say aren't part of any package, right? They're just something that have been put in configuration files or whatever. And then we can perform a number of checks and scans on those categories of software.
So great. I want to let Tim get a little bit of words in here as well. Tim, what as VP of Community and Strategy, are you then bringing in contributors, outside contributors to this, talk about the community that's already being built up around this.
Sure. Yeah. Thanks. So one of the things that we've done, one of the reasons why we built Anchor as an open source project is to attract a community and get contributions from users around the world who are interested in Anchor's capabilities. The other thing that open source does for us, since this is kind of an application focused on compliance and security in some ways, it allows users to, look at the source code and make sure it's doing what we say it's doing. So that's an important aspect of the system. Anchor is architected in kind of a pluggable way. So the idea is that for every kind of piece of information that you want to extract from a container, whether it's the list of NPM packages or the list of Perl packages, you can build a small module to do that. So of course we ship with a bunch of these little collector modules. We also have a module architecture for the reporting and the analysis. So it's pretty easy to extend Anchor in those ways without having to really, dig into the guts of the system. If you're competent in Python or I think these days other scripting languages, you can build a simple module to extend Anchor, and hopefully that module will be useful for other members of the community. This is a model that worked really well for us at Ansible, where we had hundreds of user contributed modules, just small pieces of software that extended the functionality and kind of made the tool bigger than the sum of its parts, so to speak.
Yeah. So how does this actually? I thought, and that may, I guess maybe I was wrong, but I thought this was more of an orchestration tool, but it's really more of an analytics tool, or is it both? Do you do orchestration as well?
No, Dan can maybe talk a little bit more about the architecture of the system, but Anchor is focused on a couple of things. It's focused on analyzing the contents of the containers, and that can be everything from basic file existence or lack of existence to things that are a little higher level, lists of NPM packages or Perl or Python packages. So that information gathering and analysis is one side, and then the other side is the kind of the policy driven system that can not necessarily do high level orchestration of your development and operations tasks, but can be a part of those series of orchestration steps to say, okay, we've ran the unit tests, we've ran the functional tests, we've built the containers, we've rebuilt the application. Now let's check with Anchor and make sure that everything is okay based on those Anchor policies. So it's kind of a checkpoint to say, all right, we've done all this work. Let's check in and see, if we can push this to production. So an example of this, Anchor is easily integrated with tools like Jenkins or other continuous integration systems. And the idea is you'd put Anchor in as one of those build steps to catch problems and to stop a deployment that would ordinarily fail before it gets to that point.
Okay. And then how easy is it to use the software? So let's say, like you said, it sounds like you have to create policies. Like how often does the system get pulled? Is that configurable? I'm thinking of things too, like,
sure.
So I understand what you were saying about, the going from development to production, but what about in the case of a 0-day vulnerability? So I guess there's multiple questions in there, but what if you've already pushed this to production and then all of a sudden you find out, oh crap, there was a security vulnerability in one of the packages I'm already running. What do you do then?
Right. So, I can speak to that one. So, it's maybe, valuable to realize that, Anchor is a tool where essentially you give it a container image, right? Not the running instance necessarily. So you can run Anchor pre-execution before a container image is ever executed. And that information, once an analysis is done, is stored. Another information source that the Anchor system will take is data that we're constantly curating from the net. We've got NVD information from about CVEs, and we've got official package information that we call feeds. All of this information is constantly coming into the system. And so at any point in time, If you've got container images running in Kubernetes or in a production environment, you can supply those image IDs to Anchor and ask it the question, are there any extant CVEs? Right. So that's something that the user can decide at whatever cadence they want to perform that scan. And once an image is actually scanned, you don't have to reanalyze it. You can just apply policy with new, say, security data at any frequency that makes sense for your environment.
And then, so what happens to the, so let's say there is a zero-day vulnerability and I find it, or I know it's there. I go out and I examine my policies or examine the reports that I have, and I see, oh yeah, these 100 hosts that I have this vulnerability. Is there anything that you guys do to help fix the problem? Like, is there any automated, again, I think you said it integrates with, I think, Puppet and Chef and others, right? I mean, is there anything I can do to go out and automatically fix that problem? Or do I have to manually then go out and go through the hassle of fixing all those?
So Anchor will tell you what steps need to be taken, right? When it comes down to, say, we're specifically here talking about CVEs, that's one of the policy checks that Anchor has. And if a CVE is detected, and, you know, Anchor will tell you that, you know, there's new CVE information, this image has an extant critical CVE, and it will say, this is exactly the package or the package set, and here's the ones that need to be updated. So you can get a full manifest of all of the images that are vulnerable, plus exactly what packages need updating. And in addition, there's a little bit of a subtlety here. You know, a lot of containers are actually built on top of each other. So one container might have a parent of another that might have a parent of another. And Anchor will actually tell you the earliest container to where that package that's vulnerable existed. So that as your images are coming in through the CI/CD, you might be able to update just that base container, and then you know all subsequent containers will inherit that fix.
Last year, I was at the Red Hat Summit, and I remember hearing about some product that Red Hat was coming out that was essentially a Docker repo, and it had some of these features. I don't know whether that was an open source product or whether that was something only meant to work with their commercial RHEL implementations. Is that something you're aware of? And are there other players in this space besides that?
Yeah, I can take that one, Dan, if you like. I'm not exactly sure which Red Hat product you're talking about, but I think one of the design decisions we made early on is that we could talk to a lot of different data sources and a lot of different kinds of repositories that store container images. So, you know, I think there might be some functional overlap there from time to time, but in general, we want to be able to fit into, you know, existing tool chains, existing workflows, without having to kick a lot of other stuff out. So, you know, where there are integration opportunities, we're happy to integrate. Where there's functional overlap, like you said, there definitely are a lot of tools out there that do CVE scans. So that's kind of, you know, that's kind of the way I see it, is that's the bare minimum of what you need to do to have a tool that calls itself a container, a container scanner. It has to look at those CVEs, but there's a lot more to it. And I think that our differentiator is that we go beyond just those CVE databases. We look at, you know, package manifests from different package management systems. We can look at things like the version of Docker versus the version of Docker that built the container. We can examine different aspects of the Docker file itself that determine how it's built, and it's pluggable. So if you need your own little policy built for your environment, whether it's, you know, maybe you need a certain log collection package in every container that's running, you can really easily encode those in our system. So yes, there are some other tools out there that do superficially what Anchor does, but I think that right now, you know, we're kind of the most flexible and the most the one that should plug in most easily into your existing environment.
And actually, speaking right to that, I understand that Docker has a sort of a place they call the Docker store, where they're actually checking for vulnerabilities. Are you able to get things above and beyond that, or are they comparable or what?
Yeah. Again, there's a little bit of functional overlap there. The Docker store, you know, they scan their official images and gives it kind of their stamp of approval. And that's really valuable and important. Again, I think that's kind of the bare minimum that you need to be doing. So, you know, where applicable, Anchor will be able to use those sources of information. And we pull a lot of images from Docker's Docker Hub. And we analyze a lot of those popular containers there. But again, we do more than just vulnerability scanning, and we also have the open source bits that you can run on premise, scanning your own internal images without having to upload them to a public repository, or you know, in some way make them official, if that makes sense.
Yes, and actually, we had a question right from the chat room that I think you might have just answered, but. If there's more to say, that we can do that. Tinker Toy Tech asks, can an individual user use this for experimentation for his personal use?
Yeah, absolutely. That's the beauty of the open source model. We would love to have you do that. We ship a little Docker image that has Anchor up and running. It's just a couple commands to pull down our data set and begin to do some analyses and run some reports. So we'd love to have you check that out. We have a Slack channel that you can join, and I think we also have an IRC channel on Freenode that's up and running. So we'd love to help you out if you're interested in getting started.
And for those of us who are running a Mac, is there a Docker image of Anchor?
There is, yeah. I'm running a Mac as well. The new Docker for Mac is really slick, works really well.
Yes.
I had it up and running in just a couple minutes, so that should be fine.
Awesome, awesome. So let's go back to Dan a little bit here. How is Anchor going to make money? I mean, it sounds like you're giving it all away. What's your business model here? Where are you going to get your money from? Probably, I'm guessing, freemium products and a bunch of other things. But talk to me about that.
Sure. So, as we've been discussing here, the core of Anchor is really the open source engine, right? And that's, as we've already discussed, we've got a container image that has it installed. There's a GitHub project with all the source code. And that engine itself, as Tim was talking about earlier, is very modular, right? There's a number of different modules that do various types of analysis and CVE checks. And we look for passwords, we look for secret keys, we look for package things, we check Docker files, all this stuff. And so from there, we also have a technology we haven't talked about too much on this podcast yet called the Navigator, which is a site on anchor.io that you can go to. And we've essentially taken our open source engine and pointed it at Docker Hub. And we're scanning tens of thousands of images and showing exactly what the results of that those scans are using our Anchor open source, the same thing that you can get. Now, on the Anchor Navigator, we're going to be adding a bunch of really interesting features there that will be things that we'll charge for. And those things have to do with advanced setting up of sophisticated policies and storing policy states and making sure that your on-prem system can synchronize with those policies that you've got stored. We have the ability to point at private registries and private repositories, things that are not just public Docker Hub registries. Mm-hmm. So there'll be a number of things there. And in addition, we're going to be offering an enterprise on-prem service around Anchor. It's still going to be based on that open source engine, but it'll have a lot more functionality that really turns that into a service that you can deploy. And then it will be doing things all of the time, sending you proactive notifications, sort of to a question earlier. And those are primarily the services that we'll be offering.
And you keep mentioning the word policies, but I'm not sure I understand that, and maybe some of our audience mm-hmm. might be a little confused. What an example of a policy that I might want to add on top of the basic policies of no security holes?
Right. Well, that's a really great question, and it really gets to the core of what we think is really interesting about Anchor, at least one of the things, which is that instead of having the system sort of tell you this is what is good, this is what is bad, Anchor is really designed, our approach is really designed to let you express to the system what it is that you think is secure, what it is that you think is your best practice. Because every system that we've encountered is a little bit different. Everybody has their own best practices, their own security requirements, all of that stuff. And so a policy in Anchor is a way to express exactly what best practice means to you and what secure means to you. So it's essentially on the on-prem side, you can think of it's, you know, you construct a policy as a file and it's got information in it like, you know, vulnerability critical stop or vulnerability low warn, right? Or vulnerability unknown go, right? But you can define that. And that definition is what we call a policy. You can do things like make sure that your Docker file has a health check in it as things are flowing through the system. You can blacklist packages. You can whitelist or blacklist open source licenses for software that are in containers. There's a number of different things that you can do and express exactly what you want the system to say in terms of, is this good or bad, via policy.
You know, that's amazingly coincidental. The show we had on last week was about the SIMP project, which is about a bunch of automated tools to validate that you have PCI compliance and HIPAA compliance and a bunch of other government standards. It'd be great now if, you know, if Anchor could get together with SIMP and actually build something that tests for government compliance of all your packages, right?
Absolutely. And we've had some discussions with folks about using Anchor to express, you know, part of a HIPAA or a PCI compliance chain.
Well, you can always go watch last week's show, and then you can find out more about it.
We'll do.
That's remarkably coincidental, because I was just remembering. I said, why does this sound familiar? Well, it's because we had an interview last week that was about this kind of automated probing to be able to tell whether you're compliant with stuff. So how far along is this project? Is this something I could put into production today, or are you still sort of in early alpha, or where are you at?
Nope. This I think, is something that you could put in production today, and we've touched briefly on a couple of the software artifacts that we have. We've got our container. We've got the Anchor IO navigator that you can point at. And there's some customization you can do there as well. But we also have a Jenkins plugin, which seems to be something that is resonating a lot with folks who are using Jenkins for part of a CI/CD, building a container, running some tests. And then when everything's said and done, if everything passes muster, the container moves on to production. We've got a plugin that's part of the official Jenkins plugins. You can click install and there it is. And you can add it as a build step, essentially saying right before you go, you know, as part of your container build, run an Anchor scan with a policy that you define. And if there's anything that doesn't look right, then that build will fail. And you can go and look at the report in a nicely formatted way. And so that workflow in particular, I would say, is absolutely ready for production.
So besides the open source part of this, I guess including in some cases the open source part of this, I mean, how is this different from other products out in the marketplace, say from like Datadog or AppDynamics? There's a lot of companies, as you mentioned, that are trying to solve for this problem. So, I mean, what makes Anchor better, different, whatever?
You know, I think fundamentally, you know, our approach is sort of interesting in that first, it's pre-execution, right? So we actually believe that because of the way that containers work and because of the unique problems that containers have kind of brought to the table in this sense, like that high variance of software, we can do an awful lot before a container ever even executes. And, you know, that's a really critical difference, I think, between a lot of the software in this space. Because, we're seeing that number of containers per user moving into production is very high. And letting all of that software into a production or even pre-production environment before scans ever happen is something that might become untenable. So we think there's a whole lot that can be done, especially pre-execution. And that's really Anchor's approach. And the second thing is that we're doing a lot of analysis all the way down into the files. I mentioned earlier, there's one of our checks can look for, say Amazon keys inside of a container, right? That's something that you never want to get into production. And so we can stop it right at the gate, you know, fail fast. And since there's so many things flowing into the system, that fail fast characteristic, I think, is really important.
And just out of curiosity, like what OSs do you support? Is there some that you support and some that you don't? Or what kind of support do you offer for, legacy people that have to support legacy systems and legacy software packages?
So for Anchor itself, we've got RPMs and dev packages for Ubuntu. For in terms of the containers that we scan, it's pretty general, right? It's all about categorization. So Anchor will look at a container, whatever it is, and try to figure out first what is its distro. And then from there, you can get better or not as good categorization, depending on what it is we can discover. So we fully support the RHEL-based environments inside of containers. We support Debian and Ubuntu for sure. We support Alpine, and we even have some CV scans for Alpine. But even containers that aren't one of those distributions, we still a whole lot of the gate checks and the queries and the analysis that Anchor does will still function. You can still look at files. You can still look for passwords. You can still do Dockerfile checks, regardless of the operating system that's in the container, which is useful sometimes for containers that are not exactly based on a very specific OS.
Cool. Now, how does this play in with other technologies like Kubernetes? I think I mentioned that at the beginning. Can you kind of explain how that fits together, how that in the puzzle that is the Docker ecosystem?
Well, it's interesting. There's a lot of interaction points that Anchor can sort of plug into. Because we're pre-execution, it's fairly agnostic to whatever type of orchestration system or runtime system that you've got in place. So the main spot where Anchor fits in is before containers execute. So, as you're building a container, immediately after a container is built, Docker build, blah, you can pass it to Anchor and have it do its thing. And then, it can pass along to Kubernetes. We also have, the ability to, at any point in time, you can bring back those container image IDs from whatever your runtime system is and ask it to perform scans and perform queries and do a number of things since we cache the analysis data. But also, there's some new interesting stuff. And Kubernetes, and specifically, there's this image policy webhook feature that's, I think it's still in beta in Kubernetes, but we've written a small service where Kubernetes will actually make an API call to an external backend to say, before I run this container, yes or no. And we've got a prototype implementation that implements that API and actually runs an Anchor scan. Kubernetes will send an image ID, and Anchor will run against a policy that you've defined and then return to Kubernetes, yes or no. So that's going to be a really interesting feature, and we expect to plug in there for sure.
Cool. What language do you guys primarily write this in?
So the open source engine of Anchor is written in Python. As Tim mentioned earlier, it's very modular, and those modules can be written in whatever language you like. There's a well-defined, input and output format, but we've written things that are executables, binaries. We've written shell scripts. We've written Python, but the engine itself is in Python. And then for the navigator, we've got a lot of Node that's running that, and we use some Amazon services in the back end.
Sure, sure. And then what license do you guys have for this, for the open source,
Apache.
I guess? It is the Apache license. All right.
Correct.
Good deal. Why did you choose that? Just out of curiosity. We always try to ask because people always have different opinions on what, why they choose. Oh, I want to go with MIT because XYZ,
Sure. The Apache license is very flexible. It allows for, unencumbered integration for the most part. So we thought it was a solid license for this project.
Cool. Cool. How many contributors do you have on the open source part? Is it just mostly, you guys, or are you getting a lot of contributions from outside as well?
Yeah, it's just a handful right now. We have been, kind of working on promoting the open source project a little bit. For the first few months of our existence, or I guess 9 or 10 months of our existence, we kind of hunkered down and built out what we wanted to build, opened it up to the world, and between the navigator, the little the web service that lets you dig in and analyze images. In a kind of an easy to use web interface, and the open source tool, we're hoping to in 2017 really kind of ramp up that contribution metric and get some people building some modules to solve some of their specific problems. So it's a small group right now, mostly internal to Anchor, but we're hoping to expand that out soon.
And which came first, the chicken or the egg here? Did you start Anchor and then say, we should really open source the core? Because people have different feelings about open core.
Yeah.
So which way did it flow? Was it open source first and then, usually that's the way it works, is open source and then, oh, let's build some services around this. But it sounds like this might have been the opposite.
No, I don't think so. I mean, if you look at the history of, you know, myself and Dan and Saeed Ziwani and the other members of the team, you know, we've all been in open source for a very long time. I think it was kind of a no-brainer for us at the beginning. You know, I don't even think we discussed whether or not to open source at least some of the product. It's just one of those things that these days you kind of do. It's a competitive differentiator. It generates higher quality software and it builds that community, which is just critical. I think in 2017, if you're not open source in one way or another, you know, something's fishy, in my opinion.
Now, I know Docker's the big player in the space right now, but I know there's also talk about other container formats that might be a little more flexible or meet a few more needs that Docker didn't originally envision. I think one of them is called Rocket. I may be misremembering that. It's been so long since I've talked to those guys. And it's sort of all trying to be unified in, like, I think they call it the OCI space. Is Anchor going to track all that?
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry, Dan. So we're definitely interested in cooperating and working with as many of these open formats as we can. We want to be agnostic in a certain way. Of course, Docker's the kind of the de facto standard right now. I believe, Dan, correct me if I'm wrong, we are part of the OCI as of now, right? Okay.
That's right.
So we're definitely interested in working with those new formats. You know, personally, I'm always a little bit skeptical of these kind of you know, broad initiatives. It's in this industry, it's kind of like, you know, whoever gets there first kind of wins the format war a little bit. But like you said, you know, there are some advantages to these other formats, and if, you know, it's early days for containers in general. So I think whatever bubbles to the top will be great, and we'll be there ready to support it.
Yeah, I've just been informed by my. Go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say just real quick, from a technology perspective, we built the system to be very generic. So with a very small amount of Anchor itself cares about the image format. Once we get to the point where that image is unpacked and we can do our analysis from there, it's agnostic. So we're ready to support these formats as they emerge.
And I've just been informed by my crack research staff that DockerCon is coming up on April 17th. You guys can have a presence there? Anything unusual?
Yes, we'll have a booth at DockerCon, so we'd love to see you for sure. Stop by, and we'll have some demos up. We'll be able to show some of our latest and greatest releases, and we hope to see everyone there.
One of the things that I find interesting about the notion of being able to automatically test for CVEs and stuff, though, is the notion of a risk. Is there any risk involved from your perspective about using Anchor? If something fails to report a particular vulnerability, and now all of a sudden you're liable because you're in the pipeline somewhere?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question that I think is, you know, it's something that a lot of systems that have anything to do with security have to face. And so our approach here has generally been to focus on positives, right? So if we can find that you definitely have the software, it's definitely got a CVE, here it is. We go a little bit further in some cases and say, you know, we think that based on the best information that we have available to us, that there's a vulnerability, here it is. You know, we and I don't think anyone can guarantee that you'll be able to find every single security vulnerability that might be in a system. But with Anchor, you can get quite a ways.
That would be, commercial suicide, actually, if you could do something like that, and probably just reputation suicide. One of the other things, of course, that immediately comes up then is that since this is a security testing tool, do you imagine that maybe the bad guys are going to be using this stuff and figure out what's broken and then go out and probe based on that?
That's always possible, right? This information is out there. It's not the information that we're providing isn't necessarily information that no one else has seen before, right? The data is in Docker Hub, right? Your people's containers are out there in the system. We're not exposing anything like we found a password in a Docker up container. Here's what it is. We wouldn't do something like that. But certainly when it comes to CVEs, that's general information that's even the distros publish. That's pretty common knowledge.
Okay, I just want to make sure we covered sort of the area of the risks about all this, and I appreciate the candor there. We're almost out of time, believe it or not, and I want to take a look at anything that we haven't covered yet. We covered quite a bit about this, but I'm sure we could have gone on for another 45 minutes or so. But is there any other things you want to make sure our audience is aware of before we have to let you go?
I think the only thing that I would say is, sorry, Dan, a little bit of lag there. One thing we didn't talk much about is Anchor Navigator. We touched on it a bit. It's a web service that we host that lets you, just click through and see some of the most popular Docker images out there. You can drill in, you can look at the file contents, you can search for files, you can search for packages, you can request, if you create an account, you can request to have your favorite public packages scanned and analyzed. So, without even installing anything on your machine, take a look and see if it's useful to you. We kind of want to make Anchor Navigator the best place to go to find container images and to make sure that they're appropriate for your environment.
Yeah, I'm going to raise a beef about Anchor Navigator because I actually wanted to sign up for it, and then I got to the place where I was creating my account, and apparently you guys have not read XKCD 936. Go read that.
Inappropriate password restrictions or something?
Yeah, the correct horse battery staple. That's the other thing you can Google for. Now my audience knows exactly which one I'm talking about. Anybody who says you need to have one of these and one of those and one of this and one of this set, you're actually reducing the size. All you need to do is make sure it's at least 20 characters or long. Augur, that's much easier than what you've just
done.
We'll
open up an internal ticket for that because that bugs me too. Thanks for giving that up.
Good. Okay. But that's the only reason I hadn't tried this today, because I was just mad that you had this weird test. And the other thing I'm wondering is for Anchor Navigator, why don't you just use GitHub OAuth? Wouldn't that make more sense?
Oh, boy. Dan, do you remember the decision behind that?
I think that's probably a longer discussion. But we'll certainly look into it. For now, I think really, the evolution of the Navigator, I think, had something to do with that. We wanted to really get a lot of people to be able to use it as quickly and easily as possible. We wanted to try to reduce barriers to entry.
Sure. It's not fair for me to slam you a little bit at the end of the show, but show's been great so far. So I just try to go. Here's my typical example, trying to be somebody in it. I am going to go try the Docker container right after this, though. That sounds like a lot of fun. I want to actually play it.
Awesome.
And I want to run on itself. I want to know if you guys have
your
own vulnerabilities in your own container. I think that's probably reflective. And Dan, do you have anything else to add before we have to start wrapping up?
No, I think it's been a great chat. Thank you guys so much for having us on today. It was really nice to speak to you and your audience.
And I have two more questions I have to ask both of you, since you're both hacker types. This will be appropriate questions. Dan, first for you, what's your favorite scripting language and what text editor do you use?
Oh, boy. Python, Emacs.
Emacs, I got to win. All right, that's fine. As long as I get one of the two, I'm fine. One of the two. And Tim, you going to make me happy too?
Oh, boy, this is a trap, isn't it?
Yep.
Python again, although I spent a lot of time in Perl back in the day. But I'm a VI guy.
Okay, well, at least we have a 2 out of 4 ain't bad. Well, 1.5 out of 4, not bad at all. hey, Dan and Tim, this has been wonderful. I can highly recommend this right after the show. I've actually tried to let ZipRecruiter, they're moving to Docker containers, and I know they're looking for things to add that are of this nature and quality. So I will be recommending that to my clients. I really appreciate you coming on today and talking about Anchor. Hope to see you at some conference sometime soon.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Very good. That was Dan Nurmi and Tim Gerla talking about Anchor. What did you think there, Aaron?
Really interesting. I mean, of course, like I said, there's mixed. Sorry, I'm just reading through the installation documents here. That's why I was looking so studious, looking into the thing. It's interesting. I think that there's some complications with OpenCore. It's one way to make money with open source, I guess. But overall, really interesting. I think that this is, as companies more and more look to Docker for their development methodology and even their production methodology, tools like this are extremely helpful and useful. So I think this is going to be really interesting to anybody that's using Docker. I am a little concerned, and I guess I didn't realize this until I started working for a company that works on tools like this, is the the abundance of tools doing different things, and how there's like all of these good tools, and but you have to use like 20 of them to get the job done. And so, you know, that's kind of why I asked the question about, you know, how this stacks up against competitors, because I think what I see in terms of just the way the industry is going is that people are trying to combine these tools instead of having to run multiple tools. So I think, you know, it'll be interesting to see where this goes in the future, whether they're able to do other things like, you know, tracking, performance monitoring, and doing things like application monitoring, performance of applications and things like that. So I think that that's the only negative that I can see here, really, is that it does one thing. It looks like they're really trying to make it do it really well, which is great. But then you've got five other tools you got to use to make it work. So.
Yeah, and I agree with that, because take a look even at SIMP last week. So SIMP does a lot of really great checks, but I think they run on the live system, so that you have to figure out. Because they use Puppet to sort of deploy, and as they're not deploying it, but they're actually using the checks to make sure that it's correct. And it would be great then to take all of those checks and instantly drop them into Anchor, because then you could check your repos before you even start pushing stuff. And definitely see the need for that. But it does look like a really interesting tool. And I know we didn't get much into the deep introspection stuff that was available there, but please go check out the website. We'll have that in the show notes, anchor.com and anchor.io, I believe it is. But I might be wrong. I'm not looking at it on the screen. So hopefully that's the ones we had. One of the things that that I also see then is just, you know, this is great that, I was about to say that we didn't talk about the deep inspection stuff, but in order to get into the guts of the file system and the stuff in the containers, it has to be able to go into there. And so you can actually use it to do diffs of various versions of things. Like if you have two different Ubuntu based images, you can say what's different in the two Ubuntus, but underneath that. Really, really cool thing. So, and it seems like rather complete. There's about 15 or 20 commands in the command line interface already. I like that they're starting the integration stuff. I would hope they integrate with a bunch of more things. Like we use BuildBot, a Python-based tool at ZipRecruiter. And I know GoCD, a sponsor of this show, also has their own integration possibilities. So hopefully they'll roll that out, or people out there, y'all in the community, will help them develop all that for us. But let's talk about the upcoming guests. So we do have next week, we have HubZero, which is a platform for a dynamic website supporting research and education. Basically build your own website with as little effort as possible, and yet get your data out there and get it shared, that sort of thing. That reminds me of GeoCities, but I'm sure it's a lot better than GeoCities. And I also do just dating myself. There we go. PG Backrest following that. Postgres Backup and Restore software. And then Screen Studio, which records and streams your full-res desktop and webcam. Looks really, really cool. That show, unlike all the others, that show will be on Wednesday rather than Tuesday. Same bat time, same bat channel, just on a Wednesday, because we are getting bumped for some, I think, Facebook announcement or something. I don't forget who's actually on Tuesday instead. Stacky, which is a bare metal provisioning tool from the creators of Rocks. FreeNAS Corral, we have Jason Hubbard, the beneficial dictator for life, benevolent dictator for life, there we go, who invented FreeNAS and has been shepherding the project. They now have a way of doing clustering data and all sorts of really cool things. OSCON, we'll have a live show at OSCON. We do not know the guest yet. I will discover them on Monday of that week and invite them to join us on Tuesday. Kubernetes is going to get an update coming. Speaking of Kubernetes, it's going to get an update. They were last on in August of 2015. Orchestration for Docker images, of course, as we mentioned sort of in casual passing today. Just added to the schedule since last week, we have NPM, the Node.js Package Manager. If you're in the JavaScript world at all, either server-side or client-side, you know about NPM. And we're going to be talking about what NPM is doing for the infrastructure, for the community, for things at large. We're going to see how they actually make money. That's also a good thing. Simon Phipps actually hooked me up on that, so thanks, Simon, for getting that set up. If you want to find out what my progress is at getting more and more shows booked, you can go to twitch.tv/floss, which is the homepage for this show. Again, if you have any people that aren't on that list, you just contact the project leader or community coordinator, or in this case, both. We had both of them on today. And let them know. Let them know to email me, merlin@stonehenge.com. I will put them in the list as quickly as possible. We are booking Q2 still, so to open up Q3, actually. We've got only a few more slots left in Q2. We have a live stream at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time, usually on Tuesdays. It'll be Wednesday, of course, on that day that we have coming up. But Tuesdays at live.twit.tv, we took a few questions. Thank you, chat room, from the live chat room. You can follow us at Floss Weekly on Google+, and also at Floss Weekly on Twitter. You can follow me at Randall L. Schwartz on Google+, and also at Merlin, M-E-R-L-Y-N, on Twitter. I'm going to be at the Red Hat Summit in Boston coming up very shortly, I think in a few weeks, actually. And then OSCON immediately following that. So I'll be in Boston and then Austin. So if you're in either of those cities, please watch my tweets and see where I'm at. Actually, watch my Foursquare check-ins. It probably tells you way too much about my patterns and habits and where you can kind of stalk me if you want to do that. I'll also be at Yapsi over on the East Coast somewhere. I think the Research Triangle, actually somewhere over there, I think. No, outside, just outside of D.C., actually, yes. I just booked my hotel, so I know that I'm there. And definitely DragonCon. I got accepted as a guest for DragonCon between last week and this week, so I will be in Hotlanta in September. Anything you want to plug there, Aaron?
Anything. Oh, geez, I got tons of stuff to plug. So where do we start? Sure. So the new book's coming out, Linux for Makers. If you're interested in that, or if you know someone who just got a Raspberry Pi and they're like, this thing runs Linux, what do I do? Definitely point them to the book. The book will be coming out. My publisher, Maker Media, says it'll be coming out in May, but you can pre-order it right now on Amazon. So go to Amazon, type in Linux for Makers, or type in Aaron Newcomb, and you should be able to get the book in May. And I'll also be at the Bay Area Maker Faire doing a presentation to go along with the book, and doing signings if you want, and also running our laser maze, which is cool. Also, if you're in the Bay Area and you want to come to a smaller Maker Faire, Benicia Mini Maker Faire is happening this weekend, April 2nd, Sunday, April 2nd, and you can still buy discounted tickets right up until the day of the event, and then boom, you're out of luck. You have to pay more. So if you're interested in coming to that event, please do. What else? Oh, and I should say a big thank you to my company, New Relic, for letting me continue to do these podcasts and actually providing a nice microphone for once and a nice studio. What do you know about that? So I have to give them a big shout out as well. Yeah, they're really nice.
Cool. I mean, it's like I always thank ZipRecruiter for providing me the wonderful 11th floor office. So you can see the buildings and behind me, and occasionally the tiny little tree that's now dead. But it's good. And Aaron, thank you for jumping in at the last minute. And well, not really last minute. You said this show right after I announced it. You said I want this show, and I agree. You are the perfect person to have as a co-host this week. And I muddled my way through, and you filled me in on a couple of things. So I think it all worked out really well. Thank you, Aaron, for being on the show.
You bet.
All right. And thank you all out there for watching this week's show, or listening to this week's show, however you get it, humming along with the show. I don't know. I don't know what people do with these things. I know one of my friends says he used to use it to fall asleep with. So I don't know what the quality of my skills are that I can let him fall asleep to listening to me. Anyway, we'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.